Hello, and welcome to our podcast for the Comprehensive Opioid Stimulant and Substance Abuse Program, known as COSAP. It's an initiative of the Bureau of Justice Assistance. I'm your host, Paige Pressler-Jurr, with the RTI COSAP Training and Technical Assistance Team. We are here to celebrate National Recovery Month. This podcast series is highlighting individuals across the criminal legal system to focus on what National Recovery Month means to their work and how they strive to support people in recovery. These conversations join together voices of individuals and community members across the nation who make recovery in all its forms possible. Today, our guest is Jess Nicola, a peer recovery specialist and the program coordinator for the Substance Use Response Team within the Duluth Police Department in Minnesota. The Duluth CERT was created to provide peer recovery outreach directly to opioid overdose survivors. And as the program expanded, it is now able to work with even more individuals to provide recovery support services. Welcome, Jess.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Jess, I'd love to hear about your personal story with recovery.
So I am one of those cases where I grew up in a family where substance use was really normalized. So I didn't see an issue with my use when I was like an early teen, which as I've gotten into recovery, I realize now is something that's like really common among folks that grow up in environments where substance use is really prevalent and then start to use at like an early age. Like most folks don't realize, oh, this is abnormal. Not many people do this. But I'm really grateful that I had a guidance counselor at my school who really was able to see through that kind of mask that we put on when we're struggling with substance use and really kind of made it his mission to help me. And I credit him all the time with saving my life. Although it wasn't until after I'd like left my school and I went to college that I was able to actually get and maintain sobriety. But I really think him pushing me at a young age is what planted the seed in my brain that like what I'm doing isn't normal and what I'm doing is going to be harmful to like my long-term health. But I started using at a really young age. One of my first counselors said my drug of choice was more because I loved drugs and I figured there isn't a drug that alcohol doesn't make better. So I was really into that like poly substance use. And I was able to successfully graduate high school, which still surprises me to this day. I also got student of the month like an alarming amount of times, but I credit that with just being able to make my teachers laugh. Like the first month of class, they're like, she's funny. I'm going to make her student of the month. But by the end of class, I like had a separate desk in the hallway and they're like, this girl won't shut up. But I made it through high school. And by the time I graduated, I really was trying to get into recovery. I didn't want to be sober. Like I didn't think abstinence was something for me, but I was really trying to cut back and control my use and just not able to do so. Even though I had the support of my guidance counselor kind of like helping me along the way. But then I had the opportunity to go to college. And if you're not familiar with kind of like the Midwest, I grew up in northern Wisconsin, which is by Lake Superior. So when it came time to apply to colleges, I applied to UW, University of Wisconsin Superior, and I got accepted, much to my surprise. And I thought this is going to be my opportunity. Like I realized I need to get out of my current environment. I realized that around the friends and family that I had in the small town that I grew up in, I didn't see myself being able to get into recovery there. So I was like, this will be my fresh start. So I went to college and it was move-in weekend and I met my roommate. I'm sure folks in recovery will know, like when you meet one like you, you can spot it instantly. And our parents were dropping us off and I saw her and I just knew she uses. And all those plans I had of getting into recovery just like stopped right there. And she didn't end up making it through the semester. Her parents came and got her and put her into treatment. I did make it through the semester and I started getting heavier into use. I had a couple really near-death experiences that people in recovery have. And I feel like it takes us time like removed from them to realize just how serious they were. And I thankfully made a friend who was a normie, as we say. And she didn't have any substance use. She didn't even like drink alcohol at all. She just didn't use it all. And we became really close and they really helped me get connected to the resources that I needed. And while I was at school, I had access to free therapy because in Wisconsin, it's really hard to get like any sort of services that require medical insurance. They just don't have really great insurance for poor people. So I was able to get some therapy through the university. And quickly, my therapist at the university realized I was a bit out of her pay scale. And she made the amazing referral to an organization in Superior that had some clinicians that specialized in substance use. And I met with my first therapist, who I now call my spiritual godmother. And I met with her, and going into it, I didn't think it was going to work. And I thought she was going to tell me all of this like corny advice that I had gotten at like the couple of like outpatient kind of stuff I had tried before, where they were like, write in a notebook if you have a craving and rate it on a scale from 1 to 10. And I never made it past the scale thing because I was like, 10, all right, I'm going to go use now. So I went into it really skeptical. And the first time I met with her, she self-disclosed her own recovery. And it was the first time I'd ever met someone in recovery. And she was at the time sober for well over a decade. I don't even know how long she has now. But I couldn't believe it. I thought she was lying at first. She didn't actually used to use this much. And she probably still drinks. And she that I couldn't fathom that someone who used to use like me now looked and behaved and had a position like her. But thankfully, I stuck with it and I kept seeing her. I started to do 12-step meetings and make friends that were in recovery. And I like started to kind of put pieces together. But then winter break from school came and I told all my new friends in recovery, I'm going home for the holidays and I'll be back in 3 days. And they all told me, please don't do that. That is the worst idea you've ever had. Stay here. And I was like, I'll be fine. I have like 2 weeks sober. I'm going to be all right. And I went home. It was supposed to be just for 3 days. I was intoxicated within a couple hours. And I didn't come back to like the Duluth Superior area for like a month. I had 2 overdoses in that time. In that month, I had went from like putting those pieces together and seeing recovery was possible to going back to this is the way I'm going to die and just accepting that as a fact. Thankfully, I was able to make it back up here and I did a 10-week intensive outpatient program and I went to every single thing. I never had to restart. Like I was dedicated to this 10-week thing and I started to feel like comfortable in my recovery. And that first year was rough. I took the drugs away and I took the alcohol away, but all of the other stuff like lingered. And I know I had to like rebuild all of these coping mechanisms that I used to just use when I was feeling those emotions. I had to like really rebuild and kind of restructure how my whole brain worked. So when people ask, how do you do it? How do you get sober? I'm like, it's very simple. You just have to change every way that your brain works in every instance, everywhere. But slowly, like the craving started to lessen. I started to sleep better, build more support networks. I actually dropped out of school once I got sober. So then I started getting recovery and I was doing all the recovery things. I really went into 12-step groups, which I don't do much anymore. But in my early recovery, that's really what saved my life was that support that I got in the rooms. And then I met a man, as you do in early recovery. And I had a couple of beautiful children who are now 8 and 9 who have never seen me use one day in their entire life. They've always had a 100% sober mom, which is an amazing gift for myself and for them to be able to kind of like break that intergenerational cycle. I should also note my dad is like 15 years sober off of opioids now. So it's the family is healing together, which is just amazing.
Can you explain how your personal story led to your current role with the Duluth Substance Use Response Team, also referred to as CERT, within the Duluth Police Department?
It's a weird journey of how I landed a job in a police department and something that my family and friends that I've known my whole life find endlessly entertaining because I got a job at the police department because I used to do a lot of drugs, which is like something not many people, I think, get to say. So I was working in and around recovery a bit. I was working in a reentry org. So I was doing case management with folks who are coming out of incarceration with a focus on employment. And I loved that job. I loved that job so much. I got to meet the most amazing people and see their lives transform. It was just spectacular. And then COAP, funding came out. And the Duluth Police Department, which is right next to Superior, Wisconsin, where I used to live, the Duluth Police Department was tracking opioid overdose numbers since 2013. And they were kind of housing them in a spreadsheet. Like they were able to see something is happening here and the overdoses really started to spike. And then when COAP came out, they applied for a grant to do follow up with OD survivors. They really didn't know what it was going to look like or how to do it because they're like law enforcement. They don't know how substance use works. So they applied for this grant to have somebody do outreach. And I saw the job posting and it was weird. You didn't expect a police department to like look for outreach workers for overdose. And they didn't specify they wanted somebody in recovery, but I applied and much to my surprise got interviewed and I disclosed like my recovery in my interview. And then they hired me, which was the weirdest thing. It was like such a trip. So they offered me the job and I came in and they were really, really gracious in not knowing what to do. They were like, we know we need something for these folks who have had opioid overdoses. We just don't know what it is. And really gave me full rein to kind of design programming how I wanted it to be. And I knew I wanted it to be in person because like I was able to experience the power of being face to face with somebody and hearing their story and then seeing that hope is real.
And now it's so impactful that you find yourself supporting the recovery journey of other individuals. Can you tell us more about the CERT and what it's doing in your community?
So like when we first started, it was just me doing overdose survivor outreach. And I would go and do what we call door knockings. So when someone has an overdose in our whole region, we cover like multiple counties and then Superior over in Wisconsin. So three counties in Minnesota and then Superior. So when someone has an OD in that area, we get notified really quickly. And then I was able to go out and knock on the people's door after they had experienced an overdose and explain who I was, why I was there, and then offer help. And I always frame it when we do door knockings. We're here to offer any help. And my example I always use is like, if you need a ride to the gas station right now, I can give you that. If you want to do like clinical inpatient, I can obviously help with that also. But any help whatsoever, I'm here for. You got me at your disposal, basically, with the understanding that oftentimes, like making that turn towards recovery, it takes like really, really little steps. So if me driving them to the post office is a way to kind of build rapport and get their trust where then they can feel like they can talk to me about the bigger stuff, then that's what I'm going to do. So I did that for a couple years all by myself, and it was awful. It was brutal. It was super emotionally taxing. It was tough coming into a police department, being like a peer recovery specialist when cops didn't really have an understanding of what that was. I had a hard time adjusting and they had a hard time adjusting, but it slowly got better. Officers slowly started to like trust me and understand what I was doing and be able to see kind of what I was shooting for. Because I think a lot of times folks who are outside of that SUD world think that we somehow have the magical ability to just get people sober. And it was like, if I had that magic ability, I would be in a traveling show and we would go all over the country and I would just wave my hand and everybody's sober. I don't have that gift. So it took time, but I was able to get more comfortable in it and get more support from within the police department, which was great. And then when COAP switched to COSAP and we were able to work with folks outside of just that really narrow, like opioid only lane, it started to get even better. And then we applied for additional COSAP funding to hire an additional peer recovery specialist, as well as a clinical SUD assessor in Minnesota to access any sort of treatment. You need what's called a comprehensive assessment, and only licensed assessors are able to give those. And I was able to see, like in my time kind of doing it on my own, that it was a big barrier to folks trying to access treatment. Because sometimes when you have somebody and they're like, yes, I'm ready to go, like, let's do this. And then you do, okay, well, you have to get your comp assessment and we can get you in 2 weeks. It's similar to what happened with me where I was in recovery and I was going to be gone for 3 days and it turned into a month and I just completely gave up. Like 2 weeks is a really long amount of time when you're in that ready to go stage. So we were able to be awarded the additional COSAP grant and hire an assessor to have on team, which meant that we could now do door knockings. And if somebody's like, yeah, I'm ready for treatment, We could get an assessment done in an hour. And by the afternoon on that day, we could have recommendations set out to treatment facilities. And instead of having folks wait weeks to get in, we were now getting people in a couple of days, which was just phenomenal. And now since then, it's grown more. We were able to hire two more peer recovery specialists, and hopefully we'll be able to hire another in the next month or so. But now the program, sometimes I have to take a step back and just look at it like in awe, because I really think we were gifted the right opportunity and the right people at the right time, because we are this outreach program housed within a police department that has absolutely no involvement with law enforcement officers. The Duluth Police Department has really given over control of all of our operating, and with the understanding that even having a plainclothed officer with us when we were doing outreach was going to potentially put a barrier between the people we were trying to reach and them towards recovery. So instead of like a lot of other programs I see where there is that law enforcement presence and oversight and them kind of telling you like who you can work with and when, I'm the program coordinator. So I like do the day-to-day stuff, and peers are know that they're able to come to me for what do I do in this instance, client questions, as well as programmatic stuff. We do have like a lieutenant who kind of oversees us high level, but he's really there for if we have those law enforcement questions. Like we have an address that we're unsure of and don't know if it's like safe to go and knock, like that type of stuff. But really they gave us free rein, which I think is such a gift, honestly, especially like when we do these like quarterly grantee calls, or I do some BJA conferences where I see other sites present. I can't think of what it would be like if we did our work in a marked police vehicle or something like that, or had a law enforcement officer present. I'm really grateful they've been able to give us that trust and respect. And now we're able to do substance use outreach with people from all sorts of different venues. So we still do that overdose outreach. That will always be the heart of the program for me because I know it works. We do inreach into the jails. We work with partner agencies. We work with probation and parole. Officers will send referrals right to us. They see the program works. So when they see somebody who they know is struggling, they'll reach out to us. And they're like, hey, I saw so-and-so down on Superior Street yesterday. They looked really rough. You might want to reach out, which is just fantastic to get that buy-in from a police department.
Can you define what a peer recovery specialist is and how you've worked to make sure that your program supports people in the Black, Indigenous, and other people of color communities?
God, why is that such a difficult question? Like, what is a peer recovery specialist? I feel like it's because it's a heart answer, not so much like a head answer. And maybe that's why I'm struggling with it. I see it as sharing parts of myself with someone else who is similar, because I think Me Too is one of the most powerful things a human can say to another human, to just let somebody know that they're not alone. And I think that's really the root of peer recovery. But I also think when I was building my team of peer recovery specialists, I also thought about that shared language that people have. My kind of go-to substances were opioids and alcohol. And I have a really shared language with folks who used opioids and folks who used alcohol. Meth was not a drug that I was ever exposed to. So I don't have a shared language with folks when meth was their drug of choice. So as I was building my team, I wanted to make sure I, one, got a team of people who were representative of the populations that we were working with. So in northern Minnesota, where we are, we have like a pretty diverse population. I mean, as far as Midwest standards, we got a lot of Native Americans that are here. And of course, if you look at overdose trends, like they're primarily hitting BIPOC communities. So I wanted to make sure I was, one, hiring peers that were representative of the community that we were working out with. I figured the world has enough white women social worker outreach teams. So I wanted to not make one of those. And I say that being a white woman who's getting her master's in social work. So I was looking to hire folks from BIPOC communities, as well as folks with diversity in their use. So we have staff who pharmaceuticals, pills were their drug of choice. We have staff where meth was their drug of choice. We have staff where intravenous opioids were their drug of choice, which I really think gives us a cohesive team. And we're able to kind of assign individuals to peer recovery specialists based off now a number of factors. Like, we have folks who are going to work best with our native peer recovery specialist simply because he's native. And some folks are going to work best with them simply because of the drug of choice he had, which that's what's hard where it's like peer recovery. Cause it's like, how many things can we get someone to say me too with? And that's who we want them to work with.
You are reaching so many people across Duluth with a diverse staff. What recommendations do you have for agencies within the criminal legal system to build a team of peers like yours?
Hire peer recovery specialists directly. We don't partner with like a recovery community organization to hire peers. We're able to hire them as a department, which means that they're able to make a living wage and have access to city health benefits and put in for pensions and all this stuff, which I think is something we kind of need to catch up in that peer recovery realm. We understand it's a professional level position, but a lot of peers aren't paid or respected in that manner. They're stuck making like a non-livable wage with either no health benefits or not great health benefits. So having the ability to hire them directly and pay them like the professionals that they are is really a gift.
It's been great to hear how the CERT was developed and the ways that you've built your team. I'd love to hear now about the impact of the program. What would you like to highlight, both on the individual level and for the community of Duluth as a whole?
The impact is reflected in that face-to-face peer recovery meeting that like we talked about. I pulled numbers from the beginning half of this year of all the work folks that we work with. And we track success in client goal completion. So whatever goal they identify, and it doesn't have to be inpatient treatment, which oftentimes is the goal that gets smacked on any sort of like substance use program, is how many people did you get into inpatient clinical SUD treatment? We track a variety of goals. So that can be getting employment, getting stable housing, getting visitations with their children, getting into mental health services, getting inducted on MAT, like any of these things, as well as the treatment options we track. And then just a report on how many of our clients are reaching their goals. And at the first half of this year, once we kind of got that full team in place, I looked at our goal report, and sometimes it's a little skewed because I include folks that we're trying to find in our client reports. So if somebody has an overdose and we try to find them, it's not one time. Sometimes it's we're knocking on four different addresses and going to all these different places to try to find somebody. So I thought, I wonder what our percentage of people who have reached goals would be if I took out all the folks who we haven't had that face-to-face interaction with. And what I found was that if I looked at only people who had a face-to-face meeting with a peer recovery specialist, 92% of them reached at least one goal. 92%. I was so just like overcome with joy and just like astonished and so proud of the thing that we built, that like we can virtually guarantee if we have somebody who's struggling with substance use and they meet face to face with someone in recovery, they will reach at least one of their goals. If you work in substance use, you know, like even the smallest goal is them getting closer and closer to long-term recovery. I'm just so proud of it. I'm so proud of our team.
So can you tell us about challenges that you see on the horizon and how your communities might be working to address them?
Yes, whole mess of challenges. One that I see is that we have this huge like community and kind of society conversation happening around the opioid epidemic right now. And I think that's great. We need to talk about it. It's happening. But I think it skews people's understanding of the reality of substance use a bit. In one, they think like we've been talking about the opioid epidemic for forever, and the counties and cities are getting these remediation funds, and the administration has put all of this money into work on opioids. So I think it gives people who are removed a bit of a sense that it's getting better. It's not. Overdoses continue to rise. overdose fatalities continue to rise. The opioid epidemic is still here and still actively getting worse and worse and worse as it goes, which is a brutal truth to take and to understand. Two, I think that it takes the attention of substance use disorder as a whole and substance use and places it right on opioids, leaving behind the rest of like alcohol and other substances. And people don't understand that we don't just have an opioid epidemic, we have a substance use epidemic. And that's something we see nationally. Alcohol is continuing to kill people in higher and higher numbers. Meth use is continuing to go up. We had two teenagers die of overdoses in Duluth in the last like couple of weeks. So it's continuing to hit younger and younger populations. So I like to, instead of saying opioid epidemic, say we have a substance use epidemic, and we need to make a whole bunch of changes. And I think one is the way that we as a society think about people who have substance use disorder, and two, think about what we should do with money to help them. And I say that being a government employee, I see that these agencies and organizations that have this money to help folks with substance use disorder really like to think that we know what's best. And we don't know what's best. Even me being in recovery, like I've been sober for 11 years. I don't know what's best anymore. The environment has changed. I think I have a pretty good idea, but I don't know what it's like to use substances and be back in that life in 2022. I have no idea because I haven't lived that. I see it happening with these remediation funds. Like we think, let's start a new program or create this new position or try these things that might work, instead of putting the money in the hands of people that have been harmed by opioid manufacturers that struggle with substance use on a daily basis. We need to support the whole person, not just their substance use. Like sending everyone to treatment isn't going to cure it. What will help is investing in communities that we haven't been really investing in. We've been putting these like band-aids over and over again, instead of doing the simple things that will support the whole person, housing them. It's really hard to stay in recovery when you don't have a place to live. And the best thing we can do for folks, if we're gonna really invest in supporting folks with substance use, is to house them, support them, and give them the things they say they need. Whether that be support, like employment support, connecting them with trainings and stuff that can get them in high skill, high wage employment, family services, like getting them reconnected with their kids. I mean, simple stuff, food, clothing, heat, transportation. As I have seen it working in it for years, is that it's people making decisions so far removed from the people who are going to be impacted by them. It's troubling to see what we're investing in. As I see it, we're investing in a really small portion of the person when we're just trying to address only their substance use. And we're like treatment and MAT and all that stuff, which is needed and helpful. But if we fail to address the whole person, the rest of them, we're really leaving people in the same place that they started.
Thank you so much for that. That is something that we hear a lot from our COSAP grantees, for sure, the importance of housing. So in thinking of everything that we've talked about today and hearing your story and all the ways that you're supporting Duluth, can you tell us what National Recovery Month means to you and your team?
It means I get to go to really cool events, where recovery is the topic. Recovery is my favorite topic, so I get to talk about it more than usual, which is always great because talking is my favorite pastime. I think of National Recovery Month as having the opportunity to give people that experience I had when someone first self-disclosed their recovery to me. And I've been able to have it too. Like I've had clients who have not believed that I used to use drugs or drink alcohol. And they were like, no, you didn't. And I'm like, I did. But let me tell you about why I love how much what you just said to me, because I said that exact thing to someone. I also think it's important to normalize recovery for people outside of the SUD realm, because I think that's going to work to slowly kind of chip away at that stigma, which I think is what ultimately causes us to not do that stuff to treat the whole person, because we still have the ideas that like, this is a choice and people just love drugs so much they can't stop. So I think people being able to see like folks wearing recovery t-shirts and putting yard signs up, and you're able to think like, is my neighbor in recovery? Like somebody who you previously might have never had an idea about and thought they were a total, like, I'll use air quotes, even though you can't see me on a podcast, normal person, I think is really exciting and helps to get people who don't have conversations about drugs and alcohol to have them with people they might not have typically had them with before. It also gives us space to honor those we've lost, I think. And I've been able to speak at events where we honor those who we've lost to substance use. And that I think is, it's really cathartic for people who are in recovery and helps paint the real image.
So can you tell me what's next?
What's next for me is I want to make sure to make changes in the way we educate the professionals that interact with people with substance use disorder so as to lessen the harm. There's a lot of professionals who work in this field who haven't been properly trained in substance use disorder and spread misinformation and cause harm to folks who are seeking help. And that's just through stigma mostly. So I really want to focus on like education of people who work in the SUD field. I also want to further the legitimacy of peer recovery. So keep training and hiring peer recovery staff and treating them as professionals, paying them as professionals, but also kind of presenting to the community this program. And these are the professionals that we have in place, and they're all people in recovery. I also think about like being the cog in the wheel of police reform. So my ultimate goal is to change the way law enforcement interacts with folks with substance use disorder. And that is one, hiring peer recovery staff within police departments. Two, continuing to train law enforcement officers on what substance use is and isn't. And then three, educating the public on what 911 is really for. Because that's something I really wasn't aware of before I started working in police departments and having conversations with patrol cops where they'll tell me, I get a call that comes up on my screen to go to an intoxicated person who's outside like this apartment building. And they'll say, I know before I even go there that me pulling up in my squad, getting out in my uniform is going to escalate the situation immediately before a word even comes out of my mouth. But they can't not respond to it. Like they're required to respond to all the calls that come up on their little computers in their car. So I think we really, as a community, have to work to educate folks on what do you do and do you not call 911 on. And if you see somebody in the open struggling with substance use, whether they're like actively intoxicated, who can you call instead of 911? So we can skip law enforcement getting involved at all.
We're running near the end of our time together. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
I mean, obviously, we're doing this during recovery month, so people understand that recovery is possible. But I think what will surprise people if you or someone you love starts their recovery journey is that recovery is not only just possible, it's also contagious. And once people get into recovery, if it's you and you're starting your recovery journey, you will be shocked at what an impact just you making that action has on the people around you. Like once I got into recovery, family members and friends who struggle with their own substance use reaching out to me to ask how I did it. And if they can just meet up with me for coffee and we can talk about it. So remember, like it's a big step and it's a huge move, but it's absolutely beautiful. I wake up every single day grateful that I gave myself this gift of waking up every morning sober from my drugs of choice. Sometimes I get emotional even thinking about it. Even if you don't get into the field and if you don't become a peer recovery specialist, understand that it's not just you your recovery is powerful for. It's powerful for everyone who comes into contact with you. And whether you know it or not, you become like kind of like a walking billboard message of hope for folks who are struggling.
I'd like to thank our guest today for chatting with me to discuss how one recovery journey can support the journeys of people across a community and the importance of normalizing talking about what recovery means to the whole individual. Thank you so much, Jess.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
I'm Paige Pressler-Durr, and I would love to invite all of our listeners to check out the www.cosapresources.org for additional resources and guidance for your community's overall strategy to support individuals in recovery and those that want to address their substance use.